NRP S2E38, Textures Part 2, Tips, Tricks, and Best Practices. Hey everybody, welcome back for part two of Textures. What are we going to call this one? Tips, Tricks, and Best Practices kind of thing? Or what do you think, Ian?
No, I think that's perfect.
Tips, Tricks, and Best Practices. Works for me. Anyway, so take it away, Ian. You're the 3D guy, and you've got the show notes.
Yep. Well, like I said last week, we'll probably just mainly talk about 2D textures, because everybody can research in their 3D manual or whatever, look up 3D tutorials on how to do like more of like volumetric lighting and volumetric textures. And
yeah, 2D is more general versus like 3D is more, well, if you got this program, you could use it better. And
even the 1D textures, like the gradients and stuff, you could a lot of that type of stuff is, you know, you just got to learn how to use the software a little bit and learn how to get good at using gradients, you know. But yeah, for procedural textures, I mean, again, it's sort of like that type of thing that you just got to get good with knowing how to use the software that uses the procedural textures or that generates them. And like I said last week, you can use a program called Substance Designer to make procedural texture files that you create, and you could open up those texture files inside of another program like Max or Maya or Soft Image. And usually they're not like just like image files, usually they're like I don't know what kind of file formats the Substance Designer uses, but it's some kind of proprietary format, you know?
Of course it is.
Yeah. And like I said, you could use Map Zone, Genetic Texture Generator, or Terrain Texture Generator is another one I've seen that's sort of popular. And like I said before, with 3D programs, you can use those programs to generate and also render out, you know, like procedural textures to like a JPEG or bitmap or PSD or whatever. So you can sort of use a 3D program as a texture generator. And you can also use those same procedural maps in the 3D program. So you don't even need to make a file for your texture. You don't have to make a JPEG or PSD or anything. You just mix and change the parameters on your material that you put on the 3D model. So that's always handy. But procedural textures, they have their limitations, and a lot of times they don't look that realistic because it's like a mathematical pattern sort of. You know, you can like make like patterns like noise or static like on a TV, or different kind of smoke patterns, or like a camouflage pattern, stuff like that. But you can make them more realistic by, you know, like combining and mixing them together and changing their transformations, so you can have like a smoke texture combined with some kind of like speckle texture to make them look totally different and sort of make it look more detailed and realistic. You can also mix procedurals with photographs textures. Like if you take, for example, you can take like a checkerboard texture that's made from your program, that's like a black and white checker pattern, and then you can if you took like two different types of marble texture pictures, and you can use that checkerboard pattern to actually blend or mix between those two things, so it looks like it's a marble checkerboard, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, it looks like it's a check, it looks like it's a texture for like a marble checkerboard game, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can make the you can model out the pieces for the checkerboard or like a chessboard. You can model out those pieces and put marble textures on those also. Like I said last week, it's you're only limited by your imagination, you know.
The sky is the limit, and also hard drive space.
On what was it that Captain Planet said? Only you can save the planet, or something like that.
No, the power. I think he always said the power is yours. Pretty much what he said. And we're the Planeteers. You can be one too. Because saving our planet is the thing to do.
Yep. Anyways, with hand-painted textures, there's not really that much advice that I could give on those types of textures because I, for one, don't spend the time to do them and paint them with paints or charcoals and scan them in.
Oh, you're not that dedicated, huh? Come on now.
Not for getting those type of effects. I mean, maybe one day, but it just, I mean, obviously they take like a lot of skill and time, so maybe if you get another host on that's really experienced in that area from Pixar or something, maybe they can explain some methods on that, but there's not really going to be any like technical advice that I could give to you on it as far as the software goes. So it's all just skill and whatever you want to draw, you know.
Imagination and creativity.
Yep. And you can use, if you're going from scratch, like if you're making, like, if you're trying to put in like shapes and like specific kinds of patterns that you're making from scratch, and you were trying to emulate like a realistic texture. A lot of times they do that for games where, like, if you have like a wood, if you paint like the wood grain for like a box or something, and you want to have some metal rivets in it, usually a lot of people will make like just like gray circles or whatever, and then you can use like different layer properties and blending properties and filters to like, you can do like an emboss to add like some shadows and highlights and sort of like suggest that it's sort of like a real picture, you know.
Well, I mean, a lot of this stuff, it's a lot of, you know, the Beatles used to say that they really liked, you know, 4-track recording and stuff, because you would record everything and then bump it down to the next, to the 5th track, and then that would clear up the other 3 channels to record. And it's kind of like that with creating art, that, like, you know, you make something, but then you scale it down and shrink it, or you put it in the background and it's not the thing that you're focused on anymore. You suddenly don't see all the little imperfections or all the things that you would have seen if it was, like, you know, a huge thing, if it's just something in the background, or if it's some, you know, because you can texture everything in a scene, or you can texture, like, you know, parts of it, and then you don't notice it until you get up close to it. Although, I guess that's the thing, like, you know, when HDTV started coming out and they started, you know, putting out films, and, you know, usually the films would chop off parts of the picture because you wouldn't see it, and now you do because of the size of the TVs and everything. So,
right. The only times that I've actually tried to do something with like traditional paints or something like that, or like pencils, I haven't even really used pencils for doing a texture, but I remember a couple times I actually dipped my fingers in paint and then took like a foam board, like the white part of it, I would actually like put like a lot of handprints and fingerprints on and stuff, so I can actually get like my fingerprints and use those for a texture or whatever. So if I wanted to have like a model that looks like it has like fingerprints on it from it just being used and worn out a little bit, you know.
Yeah, I've seen that. Like, you know, you were talking about having like a marble surface, and then you could put like you know, splotches and stuff. People do that where they'll have, like, you know, ink splatters or blood splatters.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you could just splatter some ink and then use that for to emulate blood, you know?
Yeah. You can just splatter the ink and then you just got to color it.
You know, right.
Run it through Photoshop and there you go.
You know, you use paints to make like some grunge masks or something like that. You can mess with the levels and make it just black and white, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that a lot of people do. Like, if you're doing a digital piece in Photoshop and you want it to look like more like a traditional thing, you can make imperfections on paper and then scan those things in and, like, you know, like all color splotches or like shaky lines or, you know, all kinds of different stuff.
I mean, when it comes down to it, it's just, it's whatever your end result is, and usually it's just pixels, you know? All you're trying to do is get information from anything, you know? You can get information just from just about anything. You can,
Especially if you beat it out of them. Wait, sorry, what? That was my inner mobster talking.
Yeah, you could pretty much just take a painting that you did, or if you're gonna, you could always steal somebody else's, which I wouldn't recommend, but you could just take a painting and scan it in or take a picture of it, I guess, and that could be your painting on a wall in your 3D scene, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You can use different kind of blending modes and stuff like that to help you out a little bit, you know, so you don't have to paint it color by color, pixel by pixel. It just depends on what you're trying to make and the effect you're trying to go for, you know? I mean, I'm not going to try to make, like, something, like, really detailed and like, really fine brush. If I'm just doing some cell shading, I'm not going to need to be that detailed with it, you know?
Nope.
So, and then, lastly here, I'll talk a little bit about, you know, the techniques for taking photographs and using those for textures. One main thing is you want to face your subject head on so you're not at an angle. If you're trying to take a texture of a brick wall, you want to be straight head on. You don't want to be have any perspective in that, and even though you can fix that in post, like in Photoshop or whatever, you can change the distortion and take the edges of your picture and distort them so it ends up being like a flat grid, you know? But it's just, if you do that already with your camera, you know, that's just one less step that you have to worry about taking, you know, and it saves you time, and, well, time is money, right?
If you're getting paid anyway.
Usually when you're trying to do texture photography, you don't want to get too close, so you can you should probably zoom out more, the more the better, usually, depending on the resolution of your camera, to get more of the pattern. So like we were saying, if you're making a tileable pattern, you can make it larger on your ground if you're doing like a ground texture, so you get more of the pattern and you get less repeating, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're doing something like, if you're taking a texture of like a drain or like a manhole cover or like a sign or something where it's not going to be repeated, you want to make sure that it's framed pretty well in the camera so it takes up the whole camera frame, you know, so you maximize your resolution, so you have a higher resolution that even if you're going down to a lower resolution for your game or whatever you're using it for. Another point I wanted to say is that you want to have your subject framed well. If it's not going to be a texture that's repeating, like if you're taking a picture of like a manhole cover on the ground, or you're taking a picture of a vent or like a sign or something, like some kind of object that's meant to be a texture, but it's just like a single object, like in the ground or on the wall, but you want to make sure it's fully framed and it's framed pretty well, so you maximize your resolution. so you're not losing any resolution if you have to crop your picture in tighter, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you want to make sure that you try to avoid taking any textures that have any shadows on them or any kind of lighting reflections or any, like, lens flare on them. So, because if you want to get, like, nice, flat, even texture with even lighting on it, it's gonna make it very hard, almost impossible for you in a lot of cases to fix that, like in Photoshop or whatever program you use to edit your textures.
Keep your fingers out of the shot, we know.
Yeah, or you don't want to take it in, you know, like if you're under a tree and you're trying to take a picture of the grass, you don't want to do that well, or you don't want to do that exactly under a tree because you're going to get shadows from the sun on the grass of the tree leaves and stuff, and you're not trying to take a texture of tree leaves, you're trying to take a texture of the grass.
Yep. It's always fun when you're trying to take a photo of something and, oh, there's the shadow of this guy standing over here in the way.
Yeah, yep. Exactly.
All right.
You want to make sure that you sort of take a manual white balance. So, have you ever taken a picture of, like, a white card or, like, a white sheet or something to make sure your white balance is, like, neutral, you know? So you're not, like, your textures aren't, like, really orange or really blue, you know?
Well, I mean, you know, for effect, you can, you know, use that to your advantage and, like, you know, get a shot and then, like, take, you know, instead of using a white, you use, like, you know, something that makes it off so it makes everything look like that matrixy green, you know?
Like, yeah.
Some people do that for the day for night shots and stuff.
Yeah. But pretty much you want to have it be use like a white card to do like a custom white balance, or at least just lock your white balance in so your camera isn't trying to adjust automatically and say, hey, this is what your color should be, you know?
Oh, I've seen people with videos where the white balance just alternates. Like, all of a sudden, they film a wall, and then they turn back, and their face is all a different color, and then it slowly morphs back. And
yeah, and this sort of goes along the lines of the shadows and stuff and the reflection. You want to make sure your texture is a good quality. You want to make sure it has enough light in it so that your texture isn't, like, real blurry and too dim, you know, or too, like, grainy.
I'm going to say most times somebody does a bad photograph, it's 9 out of 10 times it's because they don't have enough light and they don't understand that. And it's like, you know, if somebody takes a photo and says, what do you think of this? And it's like, well, everything's all grainy and dark. And it's like, if you take that same scene and have a whole lot of light, you'd be surprised. It's like, you think it's almost too much and then it's just enough to photograph, right? I don't know. I mean, yeah. In news, they've got that over 50 light where, like, if you're over 50 years old, they just flood your face with light to try and get all the imperfections to disappear and all the crevices.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's another good point that I didn't actually have written down, which you made me think about, is when you're taking textures, it's usually a good idea to take textures on a cloudy day instead of, like, a sunny day where you have all these harsh shadows from the texture itself, where it's like if you're taking a texture of grass, you don't want all those harsh shadows underneath the blades of grass. You want it to be like an even diffuse color texture. So it's usually best to take it during like a cloudy day. So
you're saying Seattle would be the perfect place to get into the texture business?
Yeah, as long as it's not raining, you know. As long as it's not raining.
Well, if it's raining, then you just start with your grunge band and everything.
Yeah. And then a couple final points is, you know, maybe try to have, like, a faster shutter speed so you're not getting all that crazy motion blur in there so it doesn't look like you're, like, really drunk or sick or something, you know?
But what if I am, Ian? What if I am?
Well, then you'll have to have a really fast shutter speed then. Because if you have motion blur in your texture and you're trying to get a real high quality detail texture, it's it's sort of hard to take that motion blur out unless if you have some kind of magical program that knows what those blurred pixels mean, you know, and can tell it to just somehow know what that information is and pull it magically out and make it perfectly sharp, you know.
Oh, you're lying to the people. Photoshop has the make it good button, and we all know it.
Yeah.
Quit trying to hide it, Ian. They all want to know the make it good button. It's also labeled bubble wrap, in case you want to use that.
Yeah. And then, obviously, that this also goes along the lines of the same thing, is make sure it's in focus. So if you have a really blurry texture, Photoshop isn't going to know what how... It's not going to be able to make it perfectly sharp for you. You can try to sharpen all you want, but then you're going to have all the artifacts and stuff, and it's not going to look like how you intended it to.
Photoshop is magic, but it doesn't always work miracles.
Nope. It does in the movies, though, if you have to tell it to enhance the image, you know?
Zoom, enhance. Zoom, enhance.
Yeah.
I see some really big pixels. I think that's kind of fuzzy. I mean, this is only like a 1 megabyte photo. Zoom and enhance!
Yeah.
I'll be on the holodeck if you need me.
Yeah, exactly. But, and also generally, like I said before, it's sort of important to have a high resolution camera, you know. Usually, you can stitch textures together like you would a panorama, so you could take a bunch of different pictures and stitch them together to get a higher resolution texture. But if you have like a 20 megapixel camera, or even just like a 15 megapixel camera, it's pretty decent resolution. You can get like 4,000 pixels wide by 3,000 pixels. I'm not sure what the pixel number is for each megapixel, but at least 10, I would think, you know, would be save you a lot of hassle, you know. The only other thing I would say is have fun, you know. Try to enjoy making some art, you know. Don't just try to get into it for the money, because then you'll get really frustrated, and working the long hard hours won't seem like it's worth it to you.
Yeah, because, you know, I hate to tell you, everybody, but we all got in this for the money. That's why I became an artist. I don't know about you, Ian. It's all swimming pools and bikini babes, so.
Yeah. Where's my Lambo?
Oh, man. But anyway, so that's all you got on part two. We're all wrapped up, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. Like I said, if you could get through the first part, this second part shouldn't be too bad.
So did you enjoy this making this two-parter, Ian? I know, you know, it's a tall order for, you know, first couple episodes. You're like, I'll make two now. It's like, oh, I don't know, man, can you handle it? Yeah, you seem to have come out pretty well.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I know, I'd like to think I know a little bit about what I'm talking about, so it wasn't too bad, you know.
That's cool. You know, I mean, this show, man, it's about taking something you're passionate about and you care about and sharing some stuff out there and encouraging people, you know, talking people into, you know, trying stuff for themselves. And it's like, you know, because there's a lot of negativity on the internet and podcasts and whatnot. And it's like, I want to talk about stuff that makes you want to get up and do something, you know. This is what I'm feeling about talking about today. And this is what I want to share with the world.
Yeah.
Also, sometimes it's like, I learned how to do something after spending 6 hours fighting with it. I think I should help somebody else alleviate this problem.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good mindset to have. Although, I mean, not everything's perfect in the world. I'm sure we'll eventually find things to complain about in future episodes. But
Yep. I'm going to turn into an old man. Just start complaining about everything. You kids and your interwebs.
Yeah. Well, that's the nice thing about being creative, is that you're able to make some magic happen with what you got, you know?
Well, it's like Bob Ross, you know, he's like, He's like, you can make your own world. You don't like the world you're in? Just happy trees, happy trees. I'm painting a mountain. This mountain, a little bear lives in that cave. And it's like, you know, you get lost in your own world. You're not lost in your own work, you know?
Yeah. Yep. But what do you think? Did you learn something?
Oh, I think I learned that the deepest love is within us all. Anyway, so that about sums it up for this week. Stay tuned. Hopefully next week Ian might be back. He might, or, you know, or it might be an Ian solo show, or it might be a me solo show. Who knows? It's all a mystery. You'll have to tune in and find out.
Yeah, I'm going down to Mexico.
Oh.
You won't find me.
Oh, they caught you when you after what you did to that guy? Oh man. Well.
No.
Yeah, well, anyway, folks, that's it for this week. Thanks for tuning in. Tune in next week to hear some more magic. And we'll see y'all on the other side.
Thanks for listening.
More, visit NoRightsProductions.com. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/NoRights. And hey, why don't you check out my Tumblr at NoRights.tumblr.com.